We have ignition sequence start.
Short distance, high impact.
5, 4, 3, 2, all engines running.
10 questions with Adam Zwar. Big names, great minds.
Make yourself a cup of tea.
Liftoff, we have liftoff.
Welcome back to 10 Questions and the series of interviews, or companion pieces really, to the ABC's comedy showroom of pilots. Now, sometimes when you've worked in an industry for a long time in one place, it's easy to keep working with the same people. You like them, they get you, you've got a shorthand. And that was the headspace I was in until this script hit my inbox called The Legend of Gavin Tanner, about a guy who thinks he's the king of the small town he lives in. A page and a half in, I rang my agent and said, yep, I'm doing this. And it was really one of the best experiences of my career, going over to Perth and working with this production company called Mad Kids, which is Lauren Elliott, Henry Inglis, and Matt Lovekiss. Mad Kids have done a bunch of online stuff, including the web series The Right Stuff, W-R-I-T-E. Go on to YouTube and check that out. It's hilarious. But The Legend of Gavin Tanner, the web series, was particularly popular, scoring over 1 million plays on YouTube, and from there being turned into a pilot for the showroom. The show is created by Matt Lovekiss. He also co-wrote and stars in it. He's a very engaging and deep-thinking guy, a universe away from his alter ego, Gavin Tanner. And when he's not creating and performing in his own stuff, he writes jokes for Julia Morris in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Oh, yes, he does. I started by asking Matt when he was most happy.
I can't actually pick a time and go, oh, you know, when I got married or anything like that, which I haven't been married, so clearly that couldn't be the time that I would choose. But I'm generally most happy when kind of lost in humor or music.
Yeah.
So it's like riffing with people or doing characters or just really playing, I guess, and finding people with a sense of play. And then it's either humor or music where I get really kind of carried away, you know.
Totally.
I think like a specific moment, I guess a specific really happy moment would be seeing the playback of a joke that really worked on a show. Like you go, oh, hey, that kind of – that went the way that I hoped it would, and there's this kind of real magic or excitement to it, which I love, and I get a genuine thrill from those moments. And then also just being lost in the composition of music. That's like a truly joyful experience for me, basically, when I sit down at a piano and I don't know what the hell is going to come out, and then you're just kind of finding your way through whatever it is your brain spits out at the time. That's like probably when I'm happiest.
You are tapping into the zone there. I can only imagine, because I've never written a song in my life, but there would be something quite joyful about that. But having said that, I do recall when you were that there's a certain joy in your eyes when you're playing Gavin Tanner.
Yeah. I guess it's the joy of being totally free.
Yeah.
You know, he's a massive dickhead, and there's something very liberating about being able to say all of the things you can't normally say, or to be so self-aggrandizing as to be offensive, and it's just, that's just really good fun,
mate. And it looks it. It totally looks it.
I mean, I would love to, you know, it would be a truly joyful experience to wholeheartedly believe it when you say, you know, I'm the biggest fucking legend there is. You know, it's even just saying the words. You're like, wow, that's a profound leap of perception.
Yeah.
That would be quite joyful to be a part of, I suppose.
The next question is, who would you like to apologize to and why?
That was an interesting question. Again, all of these questions are interesting questions. I already do apologize. I apologize to heaps of people all the time because, like, I am by my very nature really excitable and enthusiastic, and that happens when I'm around people, and I talk a lot, And I just get really excited, and then I lose myself, and then midway through, like, this other voice in my head goes, hey, you know, you should actually shut up because and just leave this person alone because, you know, it's like I'm just going for it. And then, like, I kind of check in and then as to see whether I've, like, gone too far, and then, like, I always kind of end up apologizing. Like, oh, yeah, shit, I'm talking too much or something like that. And I thought about that apology thing as well. And I guess, like, on a sort of more meta kind of level, I guess, like, a genuine apology would be to, like, I'd say anyone that I ever had a kind of an unskillful relationship with, I suppose. Yeah, because, like, depending on whichever kind of field of the world it was in, but it's like if I was unskillful in how I kind of managed a relationship with someone, then I guess I would go, I would want to apologize to them.
That's very funny, mate. The clumsy the clumsy breakup, the unskilled breakup, the unskilled...
Just an unskilled human. Just, like, learn, like, there should be courses.
Yeah, mate, yeah.
This is how you adult 101.
Yeah.
No, but you got to figure it out for yourself. That is the sadistic joke. That's Adam. It.
Particularly a mind like mine.
Yeah, totally. I relate.
The next question, mate, is what is your greatest regret?
Thinking. Too much thinking and valuing thinking over feeling. That's
profound.
That'd be it. Wow. I guess, well, thinking helps with work and ideas and problem solving and all of that sort of stuff. But I think thinking leads me to be to ignore my gut, and so my brain gets the runs and my gut doesn't.
What will you still need to do to feel you've lived a satisfactory life?
Yeah. Well, I thought to this, I thought there's kind of like two approaches. You know, so either I could eliminate the need for satisfaction itself. And that would kind of like be the ultimate way to lead a satisfactory life. So I guess you could like dismantle the ego's need for satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Or the second way I imagine would probably be to kind of, I guess, experience generosity or selflessness sort of more regularly, like mm-hmm. through, I guess, like... I guess, meaningful relationships or being part of something that I guess is more important than the individual.
Mm.
Being part of something greater than the self, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. Any plans to do that, mate?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good. It's something that, you know, I think about and I guess as a value direction is something that I... look forward to, pursuing more meaningfully, I suppose. But, no, that's definitely on the cosmic existential to-do list.
I would just love to have this kind of split screen between you and Gavin Tanner as you're saying that and Gavin's reaction.
Well, he would go, you know, he's using big words. The guy's an idiot. Books have ruined his brain. He wants to
help other people.
No, he would say, just watch the Eagles. He would say, eat a pie, have a root, you know, smoke some cones, live a satisfactory life. He would go, you know, you're thinking too much.
You're thinking too much, man.
Yeah.
Who is the person who most influenced you and how?
I'll fumble through those four different starts of my sentence. So I just started four different sentences at the same time. And so I will pick just the one, right? This guy called, Ian David, who's a, amazing Australian screenwriter. And he's also a family friend.
Blue Murder, right?
Blue Murder, Yeah, and three acts of murder and the shark net and all sorts of stuff. He's done a fair bit of work in with some WA producers, but you know, he's the guy's a legend.
Absolute legend.
And I'd written it, by virtue of a sort of family connection. He somehow came into my realm, and my mum arranged it. I'd written a pilot for sort of Gavin Tanner, a half hour in late 2008, and my mum arranged it for Ian to read it. And then and then he said, "Oh well, you know, let's have a chat." And so we kind of sat down, and then he informed me that it was a spirited effort. But it did suffer from what I intuited as a profound lack of understanding of anything to do with screenwriting. basically, I had no idea what I was doing. However, what followed was a kind of sort of four-hour discussion on, you know, writing and, you know, the certain mechanisms at play within a comic character or a comic world, the ideas of like worldview and irony and plot and all of that sort of stuff. And I maintain that I almost learnt more in those 4 hours than I did at my 4 years at university. Mm. And I guess it really fueled my desire to kind of get better at it, because it was like having been lost in the wilderness and someone coming up and giving you a compass and a map and going, well, you might want to try heading that way.
Totally. I mean, if you go to the Writers Guild website, there's writers can bid like hundreds of dollars just for a cup of coffee with a well-known writer. And and you got Ian Dover for free. Pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm eternally grateful.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, the fact that I got, a bit of time. And it was really, I guess there's an expression which is, when the, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And, or as my dad says, when the surfer is ready, the website will appear. but I think it's really true, because after writing or after trying to do an activity that you have an innate sense, you go, hey, I think I want to kind of write a comedy. And then you kind of do it in your own reckless and haphazard, enthusiastic way. And then you kind of don't know what you're doing. But after you've made a whole bunch of mistakes, when somebody goes, oh, well, you know, how about you think about this? you're kind of ready to accept that.
Totally, yeah, and it's funny. Maybe you do know the, because you've fumbled around in the dark for quite a while. You do know the rules, but you just need someone to confirm it, to confirm them, and then they become crystallized, and then you've got shortcuts.
Yeah, and you start realizing it in all of your favorite things, like you watch Seinfeld in a different way or Frasier in a different way, and you start seeing, the techniques or the aspects that are being clarified to you. You start seeing them in action and you're like, oh God, that really works. Same for sort of Tim Ferguson as well. You know, his book, The Cheeky Monkey, is just so has got so many aspects that where he discusses comedy and narrative construction and all of these sorts of things, where then you see it in action and you're like, well, I think the guy's pretty much on the money, because it's being backed up with evidence.
Well, I've read that book and I agree completely, because of the confused looks on people's faces when they realize that comedy is about technique, and it is about, there's a lot of learning that goes into comedy. It's just like any other trade, really. There's ways to do it. And I guess the reason why people don't want to know and don't know is because it's best they don't look below the bonnet.
Yes, totally. But you don't want to ruin it.
No, that's right. But it's integral to people who actually work in the industry. You've got to look below the bonnet.
Yeah. you got to have a tinker, Adam.
You've got to look at a lot of engines.
That's it.
Mate, when was the last time you cried and why?
I can this is a bit of a ridiculous story, but I can remember it vividly. The last time I remember crying like, properly was in 2009, right? And it was a bizarre circumstance. I'd kind of been, going through some stuff in my personal life that I was not sort of aware was maybe affecting me. But anyway, I was at the office. I was working in engineering with my dad at the time. And I was late at the office one night, and for some reason, I've kind of flicked on Cathy Freeman's 400 meter Olympic gold medal run from the 2000 Olympics, right? And it was just a regular kind of day, and I was just like, oh, you know, I'll watch it. And there was just, oh man, there was just something in it, you know, watching this video of like Cathy just running, and it was like the hero's journey, you know, the Joseph Campbell kind of thing, you know, like the hero sort of had the courage to give it like absolutely everything. And there was, you know, this huge kind of, if you watch that footage, it was just this huge kind of sacrificing like the totality of her existence to like conquer this enormous obstacle. And like, it was like the magnificence of that moment and the determination and the courage. Like it just hit me. And then all of a sudden, completely involuntarily, I just burst into tears, you know, and I was just like,
yeah.
And I had a friend, Andrew, who was working in the office at the time, and he heard this going on, and he came in and he saw me, and he's like, what the hell? And like, he looks, and I'm sitting there watching Cathy Freeman, like, in tears, and I'm just like, I had no idea what was going on, and I was just confused, and it just kept on coming. It was like it all just came out.
Mate, I have that exact thing. I've cried over many times because of the pressure that was on that woman at that time. There's no way that you can overestimate the weight that was on her shoulders.
Yeah.
And as she's coming around the bend,
yeah,
and the final bend, you're thinking, I don't know if she's going to do this. And then that kick at the, like,
that's
the 150 meter mark, and then Bruce going, what a champion, what a legend.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was that kick. It's just the, I have to give everything.
Yeah.
I have to give total sacrifice, and it was like, it was magnificent.
I agree. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up. And that also, apparently, to those who are there, and are apparently, by the, you know, I've spoken to all of them, I think, that the sound was the most deafening of anything. No football match or anything's ever been able to replicate how loud it was. As she came around that bend.
Yeah. I mean, looking back now, I think, you know, there were other things, like non-Cathy Freeman related things going on in my life at the time. But it was this thing that just me so deeply, and I was like, wow.
She was the vehicle. She was the vehicle for
Greece. She was the catalyst. Cathy was the catalyst. That's And, you know, it was pretty funny because I immediately then went and wrote a storyline about a guy who keeps bursting into tears for no apparent reason. And it's confusing. It's like, where did that come from?
Mm.
Yeah.
Mate, I've been there, brother. What is your current state of mind?
Fair. always pretty contemplative and thinking about things, as always, but I'm working on a new show with Henry at the moment, which is kind of coming together, and, you know, we're kind of thinking there might be something in it. So I guess I'm feeling sort of purposeful and optimistic.
Yep.
Generally fair.
That's good, mate. In fact, that should be on the call sheet when your show gets up. Matt's set of mind, fair.
Fair, yeah, exactly. Yeah, turbulent.
Turbulent.
Yeah, give him a wide berth today, guys. Don't take any of his muffins, and he knows which ones are his.
I was once, there's a very famous Australian actor when I was just starting out, and we're in the dressing room, and I read his newspaper. I was made very aware that that was the wrong thing to do.
Is that right?
Yeah. So
one doesn't touch his newspaper.
That's right. Buddy, what do you consider your greatest achievement?
Well, I reckon it's kind of more of a philosophical answer, I suppose. But I think to have spent sort of much of my time on Earth having fun with people I like and whose work I admire, I suppose. You know, I've worked in, you know, music and radio and reality TV and narrative comedy, and I've kind of been surrounded by fun, kind of hardworking, creative people who, you know, in a world where you can spend time in a job you hate with people you want to murder, it feels like an achievement to have it the other way.
Mate, that's a really good thing to say. And also, having, you know, obviously, and I'm not making, I am making an assumption that, you know, the engineering days were probably not what you wanted to do, you know, and
well, I enjoyed those days for they just accessed a different side of my brain.
Oh, okay.
I actually really did enjoy those times. I enjoyed the challenge, but I enjoyed, you know, I love Microsoft Excel. I bloody love it.
Okay.
I absolutely love it. I used to write those VBA routines for it, make it do certain things, and that was deep satisfaction.
Okay.
Absolutely. But I would rather be making bum jokes, yeah, to be honest.
Who would you want in your side in a battle and why?
Probably a few people. I reckon my family. Yeah. Because they wouldn't care they wouldn't care if I started it. You know, if someone came at me with a flaming scimitar, you know, they would back me up.
That's cool.
Yeah, and my dad's got an expression which is, do you want me to burn their house down? Which, like, he'd ask if I was ever having trouble with someone. He'd come in and he'd go, well, do you want me to burn their house down? And I'm like, oh, yeah, nah.
Is that, is it just, being metaphorical, or is he going to burn their house down?
I think it is tending towards the metaphorical. But I guess I've never really tested his resolve on that one.
Tell him to get back to us.
Yeah, for sure. You know, he, you know, they're on side. My mum has a very different. The thing is, in actual fact, my mum, she would go to the enemy camp, and then a few hours later, she would come back saying, "We've had a good talk. We've cleared it all up. There were some misunderstandings, and we're all friends now."
I've met your mum. I can imagine her saying and doing that.
That's it. That's her thing. She's like she's covert, because it's like she'll win you over, and then you're like, what? No, hang on a minute. I was angry. I was bloody angry. Yeah.
So who else? You got your parents?
Yeah, my friend Lee. He's a bona fide nunchuck wielding psychopath. When his blood's up, he's like a genuine, like, you just don't mess with him.
Yeah,
like,
right.
He's a guy who's like has, and you just go, I want Lee, you know, front and center. And I reckon Henry and Lauren, my business colleagues, would be able to inflict upon the opposition some pretty creative insults.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I think if just in terms of the Gavin Tanner pilot, that Eddie Beru would be quite handy as well, just quietly.
Wouldn't he just? Oh, man, yeah, actually, he's front. So he can be the Trojan horse out of which we all emerge.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, I love that guy.
what a champion.
And the final question is, what would you like your last words to be?
I thought long and hard about this one, Adam, and I think if my last words were something along the lines of, I couldn't possibly make love with any more Victoria's Secret angels. I feel like I'm about to have a heart attack. Well, I suppose I should at least give it a try.
We have ignition sequence start.
Short distance, high impact.
5, 4, 3, 2. All engines running.
10 questions with Adam Zwar. Big names, great minds.
Make yourself a cup of tea.
Liftoff. We have liftoff.